Make your standing.
March 11th, is it? Yeah, March 11th, 1962. And this is it. Harry Hughes, the car, and Andy Weston is here with me, and we're meeting with George Gilbertson of the oldest roadhouse in the Fairbanks area, still operating today here, just out on South Cushman Street. And George is kind of operating this place on his own, and he's going to tell us a little bit about himself.
Well, I arrived in that Ketchikan on May the 17th, 1924, and was a mechanic. And then I went to Haines as a plumber. I coached down in Silk Creek Barracks for 3 years. Back to Junior, went to Jim Connors, kind of motor company.
Jim Chase.
Also, I had some dump trucks there. And left there in 34, came up here, but in the meantime.
That was a little out of time on that, so we'll start all over again. And this is March the 11th, 1962 at Fairbanks, Alaska. And this is Harry Hughes and Frank Young, recording for Igloo 4, and we're visiting George Gilbertson, the oldest roadhouse in the Fairbanks area still operating today. And George is working here running this place alone after all these years. Waiting on the customers himself, and he'll tell us a little about himself.
Well, arrived in Ketchikan on May the 17th, 1924. Worked there as a mechanic that summer. From there, went to Juneau and took a position at Haines as a post plumber for 3 years. And returned to Juneau. And worked for Connor Motor Company, old Jim Connors. Also worked for Jim Chase. Had a couple of dump trucks there. Well, I went mining in 32 up at Windham Bay with John Green. And I don't recall it. Goodman Jensen is what his name was. Bertie Jensen's father. We were up there on a prospect. Well, I prospected there a year or two, and then I came to Fairbanks in 34. Well, since then, I've prospected and mined out in Gilmore and Hill Creek, and have been prospecting different places. Mined out in the Chicken area now for 4 years. Also on Alder Creek over the Gokona Glacier. And now I'm over on the boundary side. I had to give up Mosquito Fork on account of the drainouts, or washouts, you might call them, last year. So I will proceed back there again in the spring, and that'll be the end of this month.
Where were you born, George?
I was born in 1904 on February the 22nd.
Where?
In Minnesota.
Minnesota, boy.
Minnesota, 96 miles out of Minneapolis. Left there when I was 8 years old to Montana. Left Montana in 1924 and came to Alaska. Been here ever since. I joined the Igloos, number four in, I believe it is 1954. I'm a lifetime member. And most of my summers now are spent out in the creek. Prospecting or mining. But prior to going over in the 40-mile district, I had this hotel known as the Pioneer Hotel, which burned in 52. That was my downfall, I believe, losing that place of business.
Now, around this Pioneer Hotel, George, can you tell me some of the incidents, the things that happened over there? We used to have some good times there.
Well, we had some great times there, and a lot of the old-timers here to go back and history in there. It had quite a history. If that place could have talked, I think we could have made several movies out of it. But I think what we have to do here in Alaska today is get our resources going. And if we don't, why, we're about folded. Because we're going downhill every day. I guess a few others have seen that. Well, I don't believe, Harry, I have.
Tell us about the bar. It comes from the history of the bar.
Oh, the history of that bar at the Pioneer Hotel
that went over the White Pass trail. And I'm quite sure Bob Bartlett's father was the man that moved it from Skagway to Whitehorse and to get to the Yukon River. And it went to Dawson City, and it was in the M&M bar there. Well, Dawson City rather folded up, and Charlie Peterson and Bill Keller purchased that bar. They purchased it, shipped it down to Circle City, where Bob McComb then hauled it into Fairbanks, and it was installed in the Pioneer Hotel. It is one of the oldest bars in the Yukon Territory, or the Territory of Alaska, and is originally a hand-carved deal from France. And I have never saw one like it since. And it was very antique, and it is really of a great loss to the community. We lost that.
The value of that bar at that time.
Well, I've heard several discrepancies on that. I've heard the bar originally cost $25,000, and what Keller and Peterson paid for it, I couldn't tell you.
I heard that the freight cost almost as much as the bar to get it into Dawson.
Well, I'd assume it did, because shipping from Seattle even, or from France to Seattle, then Seattle to Skagway, over the trail, why, I assume it had run into pretty heavy money. Because they did, at that time, paid up to $1.25 a pound from Skagway to Whitehorse. That, of course, some of this stuff is all reports to me.
When you first took over the Pioneer Hotel and the bar was in there, sometimes you had two or three or four bartenders working.
Oh, yes, we had at least two on shift all the time. And I've seen, of course, there they stand there, stood there during the... We took this over in December the 1st, 1944, from Keller and Peterson. See, the military had a lease on the hotel prior to that time, and Mr. Peterson and Mr. Keller wanted to get out of business, so this man, Olaf Grinnell, and myself took it over.
How long did Stubbs run that bar? Do you remember a fellow named Stubbs? Or Stebbins?
No, that,
Tubbs. What was it? Tibbs was
his name. Oh, Tibbetts. That was Tibbetts. Tibbetts, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, Tibbetts, yeah, he now is living in Seattle. He run that for some time. Keller and Peterson,
leased it out?
Purchased it from him.
Oh, I see. And Tibbs went on to Anchorage and run the Pioneer Bar down there.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Well,
you want to stop a minute with him?
I guess.
We'll rest a minute. George, wait on his customers.
Okay.
George, I want to ask you about the time in the bar down there that we had a shooting scrape and shot the bar full of holes. You remember that fellow you jumped over the bar and took the gun away from him? You didn't know whether it was empty or not? You remember that incident?
Yes, I recall that. As a matter of fact, he shot this one man three times. And the man lived. They got him to medical attention right away. And well, this man done the shooting. He was out on bond. He disappeared. I don't know where he went.
Just out of the blue sky, he started shooting the place up.
Well, we had a few bullet holes through some stools. And that was the second shooting scrape that I knew of had been in there. But they do get gun happy here sometimes, I believe.
They did in the past. Well, we do have once in a while now, too.
Well, they haven't got over them, them pistols yet.
Louis, something else I wanted to ask you about. During the time of the fire, George, what do you remember about the things that we did around the fire?
Well, at the time of the fire, I was in Havre, Montana at that time, recuperating from an airplane wreck. And I was called, my son called me at 4 o'clock in the morning. And I was laying there reading at the time in the Havre Hotel. Couldn't sleep. So he told me what happened, and I got on a... Couldn't get out of there. I got on a train, went to Great Falls. And I got on a plane at Great Falls and got to Seattle on a freight ship. And I was here in Fairbanks that afternoon. So I had fair connections in order to do that. Because we didn't have jets them days. But it was good transportation anyway.
Well, George, leading up to today, you're on the committee for the pioneers in regard to pioneer welfare here. In your opinion, what can we do to encourage and speed up this recognition of our homes of the past here?
Well, what we have to do, the pioneers will have to take a few of these things into consideration here. We're going to have to do something with two ordinances that we have here in Fairbanks. I believe one order is number 1050, another one is 1100, where these people can walk in as an inspector and can condemn a man's home or his business property. And the man that does the condemning doesn't even live in the city limits.
Doesn't own anything,
doesn't own any property. I think us pioneers had better get together and do something.
It's an invasion of privacy that has taken place here in the last few years. Last 3 or 4 years.
And this has, I can lay it to this. It's all come under our present form of city government. And it all originally came out from under our so-called Junior Chamber of Commerce. I notice some of them are in town yet, but they're not doing too much. They put in city membership form of government. Then they forced the NC company out of business with electricity. They sold us electricity cheaper, also steam, way cheaper than what we're getting it today. And we're supposed to be modernistic today.
No, wait a minute.
Better hold it up.
This is George back after waiting on a customer.
Well, some of you folks perhaps would like to know what our... I mentioned our steam and our electricity. The NC company had a special rate for power, such as a electric stove or a motors and such as that. They'd start you off at 7 cents a kilowatt. But your lights were 10 cents, but you got a staggered rate on that also. Well, the Pioneer Hotel, for an example, when the NC had steam and electricity, our steam bill, starting in the 1st of May, was $40 a month till the 1st of October. And from there on, the winter months, it was $400 per month. Well, immediately when the city took over, they had the same plant, and they had to get electricity from the FE company. Well, that steam bill ran to $1,750 per month. Now, I don't understand it, why it should take such a jump. Of course, we could have had the FE company power plant, which produces four times more generation and electricity than we have from our new plant today. We could have had it for $2,250,000. Now, we, City of Fairbanks, property owners, are in debt between $17 and $18 million with our new so-called equipment that can't produce what we need. I don't know.
That's true, too. Well, George, this next few months should see a change if we can either elect some responsible property owner to the city council and the mayor, or we recall the city manager form of government. One of the two things must take place. Now, the city charter was written by a group of individuals. There was very few people appeared to those hearings. I was one of the few, the 8 or 9 that appeared at those closed hearings and protested this city charter. That's a record. Charlie Cole took the tape recordings while I was talking. So the city manager and the city has those records of what I said at that meeting in protest against this city charter and the way it's written up. Because it doesn't respect the Constitution and the privacy of private ownership.
Charlie Cole is now a district magistrate, right?
Yeah.
Well,
so, go ahead, George.
In 1951, I was sitting on the council myself. But I said at the time, the council members, they didn't have nothing to say. And the way conditions are today, we don't need a council. Because they don't have nothing to say. The city manager has something to say. And if we people that are property owners here and the taxpayers, the ones that are footing the bill, if we don't do something about this city managership form of government, I think we'll all have to leave. We have today, I'm quite sure there's 370 city employees. Last spring, I got a list of all the city employees, and there were 302. And as of today, there is 62% of the city employees living outside of the city limits. Now, most cities, any size, which we can't call ourselves a size, they all got to be living within the city limits. And why should a city employee eliminate himself from sales tax when the poor property owner has to pay it? Why, we have a problem on our hands, and I think us pioneers can take care of this problem.
Somebody's got to take care of it.
And we'll start it off, and we'll be going pretty quick, I believe.
Well, I think we're making progress if we go along and take each step that the Constitution allows us to do. We have the right of appeal and the right of referendum under our Constitution. When we lose that, we've got a communist government.
Well, our urban development, which I fought against, fought very hard against it. That was number one of our big downfalls. Now, we have a chain store outfit over there under urban development, and that vacant property over there, I think about all it is parking lot for the city employees. Now we'll have Woolworth going into business here soon. They have over 3,000 stores. Safeway has over 3,000 stores. If they lose 2 or 3 million a year, that won't hurt them then. They'll take it out of one of the stores in the States, but what's happened to the small businessman here? You'll watch Second Avenue now when Woolworth gets going. They'll have a restaurant. They'll be selling spark plugs, school supplies, clothing. I've also heard, now this is a rumor, of course, they're going in the furniture business.
Well, they're turning out to be all general stores. Sell everything or anything.
I've heard that also. Yeah. Well, that's going to be a big problem, but we'll give them a little tussle anyway.
Well, now, George, a little bit going back to your mining, what do you think the opportunities are for the newer and younger people to get out in this country and make something?
Well, it's got to the point, the younger fellows, they don't seem to think too much of this prospecting because they'd rather be on construction, whereas, of course, they only have you, if you're lucky, to get 3 months of your construction anyway. But it's almost impossible now to go mining and hire help. It's a tax program that gets you. Mm-hmm. And the gold hasn't moved since 1932. I think it was raised in 1932. To $35, and it's still at $35.
Well, do you think subsidy in the gold will be the full answer to it, or just a checkmate for the time being?
Well, I believe there should be a subsidy. Canada is giving a subsidy, and if you lose money over there, they'll help you along. If you lose money over here, they'll laugh at you. That is a politician.
You figure a way to take the rest what little you save out.
Well, we've got a problem, and we better get on our natural resources, or we're going to be whipped. Well, anyway, I am going to sure try the natural resources. I'm going to try it again. I had to move off from one creek. I moved off from quite a few. And I guess quite a few of the other miners has too.
Well, George, anything else you'd like to say?
No, I could stand here all day and send off some...
Because you've had your misfortunes here, which we all know about, George.
I just lost a cabin now over in Chicken. There's the only cabin there and on the airstrip, and there's only two men living there. But it wasn't done intentionally, we know that. They use it for meeting the mail plane. 60 below where it was when it burned.
What kind of equipment do you use mining, George, and how do you mine present day?
Well, we use a bulldozer and shove it on a slick plate.
What, do you have sluice boxes and water running in them?
Yeah, we have.
You concentrate and then clean up?
We have ripples in there and we clean up. But I was on a mosquito fork, but it's almost impossible to mine the mosquito fork. That gold is too fine, and you just simply cannot save it. They haven't come up with anything yet to save it. McComb has tried it, I've tried it, Purdy's have tried it, and a number of other persons have tried it.
Well, George, I want to thank you for the tape for the Pioneers of Igloo 4, and it will go permanently in their records. And you understand about these tapes, they're protected by law, and they cannot be quoted or reused for any commercial use without your waiver. An individual must come to you and get a signed waiver in order to get the use of this tape. Otherwise, they're strictly records of Igloo 4, and they're protected up to 26 years by normal law. And if the Igloo decides to copyright them, they can extend that time to 54 years before anyone can use these commercially. You understood that law, did you, George?
Yes, I did, yeah.
All right, now if anybody wants anything from this tape, they must consult you.
That's right.
And present at this recording is Harry Hughes.
Annie Wicken.
Annie Anderson.
Bell West.
And this is a Sunday afternoon visit with George Gilberson at the Old Ranch Roadhouse on South Fairbanks on Cushman Street. And this is March the 11th, 1962. This is the end of this recording.
ASHA had inquired about the city's intentions on following suit on the east side. It was the overall opinion of the property owners present that the proposed setback be abandoned and that Cushman Street should remain as it is. The commission will evaluate their opinions and make a recommendation to the council within the next 2 weeks.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
Just one additional question, although this is not pertinent to this. I'm just wondering what the status of Mr. Claus's building permit is. Do you know that?
Yeah. I talked to Mr. Claus today about sure he happens to have his building permit. One of the complaints he had, which wasn't was jokingly, he had to pay $350 for permit. But he's glad to get it.
When
he got his permit.
When did he get it?
Today, apparently.
I think I'm going to. Council has pretty well agreed that he should have his building permit. I still feel that it's something that the city should take care of, is having this ordinance removed some way from the code of ordinances if the ordinance at present calls for a 5-foot setback. It seems to me that there should be a definite understanding on this matter, so that anybody along that street may know what they can or cannot do and still comply with the ordinance.
First street, yeah.
On third, I'm referring to now, not first, but third. And for that reason, if it had come to the vote, I couldn't have conscientiously voted for the permit because of the ordinance being present. I feel that, for the record, certainly the Nolans and the Zardy should be commended for observing that setback on the third.
Can I ask that?
Pardon?
The Nolans are the ones that asked for the setback.
Mr. Jackson, what was your ruling on? Did you feel that was an invalid ordinance?
Yes, Mr. Mayor, and I so ruled. However, it would be desirable to have an ordinance to strike this from the books.
And,
as a matter of fact, an ordinance on the question of all of our setbacks would be advisable to take them out of the zoning code and set them in under Chapter 11 of streets, which is a more proper place for them.
I would so move.
Yes.
It would take this out of the setback thing and put it into Chapter 11 of the ordinance.
And this particular setback.
This particular setback being stricken from the books, in that we have an opinion from the city attorney that it is not a valid ordinance. Be the setback on third from.
It's just that one block, sir.
Yeah. It runs from Lacey to Cushman, doesn't it?
Right.
At that point. Move the second.
Further discussion. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, is Mr. Brinkman's motion to have the city attorney direct a motion to this effect?
That's correct.
Yes, that's correct. All in favor of the motion, signify aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Just another question on that now. Mr. Jackson, if this is moved onto a separate chapter, how will that affect the Planning and Zoning Commission as to their hearings on subdivision and then they would desire to come forth with a setback on the street?
Mr. Mayor, you could still use the Planning and Zoning Commission as an advisory board to advise you as to what they thought about the necessity and desirability of setbacks. But they would not then fulfill exactly the same function that they now perform in planning
and zoning. This setback would not go into a part of the regular business of planning and zoning, only in that if they were petitioned.
Well,
the council itself could hold public hearing without the benefit of the council of the planning and zoning holding public hearing.
But this again depends on the council's feelings on it. They want to provide a method so that everything is initially referred to the Planning and Zoning Commission as an advisory board. They can do so, but it would not have to.
Thank you, Mr. Jackson.
This is something that the council may wish to take up.
I agree with Father discussion.
Go to special order of business. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to speak on a subject that is not on the agenda? So come forward and state your name, please.
I am a mayor. My name is Adolf Stock. I am issue number 4, Prime Minister of Alaska. And I ask permission to have our commission present the city president to have a address to be entered in a minute.
Fairbanks Pioneer Welfare Committee, care of Nodale Hotel, 517 Second Avenue, Fairbanks, Alaska, March 12, 1962, in the Honorable Mayor, Common Council, City of Fairbanks. Gentlemen, Igloo number 4 and Auxiliary number 8, Pioneers of Alaska, composed of 731 active members in the greater Fairbanks area, feel a great concern over the condemnation of the homes of some Alaska pioneers and retired elderly people by inspectors from various departments of the city of Fairbanks. Even though these homes may not be models of modern architecture from the outside, they are warm and comfortable within and suited to Alaska climatic conditions. Most of them have been lived in by their owners since the early days of the city. They constitute the only individual homes available to their owners and the only homes their owners will ever be able to afford in the short space of life left to them. Igloo number 4 and Auxiliary number 8 appreciate the efforts of this city's government to modernize living conditions in the city of Fairbanks by paving the streets, the building of sidewalks, and the bringing of sewage disposal, water, electricity, and various other modernizing features of the city, and realize what a tremendous task lies before you. However, this is a very long-range program which still may be going on when many of you yourselves are old men and women. So it should not hurt the program for the city to be lenient toward its older citizens for a few years. Besides this, when this modernization program is finished and Fairbanks is a city of modern homes and beautiful buildings, all you will have is another American city with features that can be duplicated anywhere in the United States. All of the picturesque features which have made Fairbanks unique and a tourist attraction will be gone. It will no longer be Fairbanks. even though a better city to live in, we all have loved and all have striven to improve. With the foregoing in mind, Igloo Number 4, Pioneers of Alaska, has appointed a welfare committee to be known as the Fairbanks Pioneer Welfare Committee, to look into the foregoing matters and to contact and make suggestions to the mayor and common council of the city of Fairbanks. Therefore, following its instructions, this committee, in regular committee meeting, respectfully requests the mayor and common council of the city of Fairbanks to notify the committee through its chairman before any move is made by city employees to condemn as dangerous, unsafe, or not conforming in any way to city ordinance any home of a pioneer or retired elderly citizen in the city, so that the contemplated condemnation may be softened, modified, or removed, or some action be taken in consultation with the city government to correct the condition or conditions which have led to the contemplated condemnation. This committee also respectfully suggests the following to the mayor and common council of the city of Fairbanks. One, that the present California building code, as applied to the city of Fairbanks, be repealed as inapplicable to this city and Alaska, and new code be drawn in its place. Two, the ordinance number 1025 and ordinance 1100 be repealed. Three, that there should be some form of property tax exemption for pensioners and retired elderly persons. Respectfully submitted this 12th day of March 1962 by the Fairbanks Pioneer Welfare Committee. Signed, Adolph Stock, President of Igloo Number 4, and Pioneers of Alaska and Committee President Pro Tem, Committee Secretary Irving Reed, Member Colin McDonald, Member Andrew Wickham, Member James J. McDonald, Member Mike Stepovich, Member Harry L. Hughes, Member George Gilbertson.
Mr. Mayor, I think that the council recognizes that there are problems with our elder citizens, their inabilities to work, the houses that they live in, which they own, their inability to move. We discussed this previously at times, and we do have particular problems that are peculiar to those particularly elderly citizens. I think that possibly we should hold some discussions on this, and I would suggest that it be brought up at several meetings of the Wednesday meeting groups so that we can come about with something to at least help these people, if we can possibly do it better. And I would suggest that we do have some meetings, or it be brought on the agendas for some of our Wednesday meetings.
This was one of my great reasons for advocating Pioneer Park, just basically, and the home, for this basic reason that we're approaching a time when many of these homes may not live up to the California building code. And from taking the time to talk to a number of these elder citizens in their home, you just mentioned the fact that there are various welfare things available for them, and they want their part of this. And this is admirable in a day and age when we're practically more and more every day becoming a welfare state. They simply want the right to live in the country which they helped defend. And I'd like to point out here and now that this problem is one of the ones which the park would have greatly helped to solve. And if this park and home for these people was not just a play area or a recreation area. I do know that the city is confronted with problems. Mr. Melville, Mr. Norby have certainly problems as far as the condemnation of a number of these homes. As I say, problems may exist up there. I think it's a wonderful idea that we accede to their wishes regarding discussing real problem areas with their welfare, board. If the welfare board is in effect now, as such, Mrs. Ringstead, I don't know whether they've run anyone out or not. They feel it is a problem. They brought it before us. I'm simply discussing it. I don't know if they run them out or not. I'm going to see if they don't, if I can help it.
And I'm going to be the only one. I don't think anyone on the council
will stand for anything. Well, that's fine. So they feel it is a problem, though, and they brought it before us. With the rest of the council's approval, I would move that any such condemnations or evictions that are contemplated or being discussed now be taken up by the city manager and the building inspector with their welfare committee. In fact, I think this would be a great assistance to the city and probably solve many problems before they actually arrive.
I would second that motion.
I understand that to be only Pioneers, or how would they be?
They mentioned in the report, Mr. Mayor, that it would be Pioneers and Helmer the people.
I think it's covered in that one paragraph where they put through, actually, it's, although it's a statement, it's in the form of a request.
Okay.
I beg your pardon, Dave?
I was also.
Keith Smith scheduled for the second vacant hearing.
Mr. Adams.
Mr. Mayor, I would prefer in this case to have some further discussion as was previously suggested in the council on these matters before taking any definite action tonight. I don't feel that the Pioneer Home question for this area has only come up recently with the talk of the park. I think that for a long time there have been many people in favor and would have supported a Pioneer Home in this area. I think it's something that would be very good, and I think a lot of other people feel the same way.
Meantime, we need something else.
In the meantime, we do, and I think it would be good to study into these things, and I would like to study these ordinances that they have requested to be repealed. To me, I think it would be better to study these things a little bit before we take any action tonight.
The only action I recommended, Mr. Roberts, was there's a very simple request of theirs, and I don't think it would affect any of our laws in any way, and certainly couldn't be misconstrued as hasty action. Mr. Jones, would you mind reading that particular paragraph that I have reference to, requesting that the formation of their welfare group and the action that they would like to have taken? I believe it's a short paragraph.
Therefore, following its instructions, this committee and regular committee meeting respectfully request the mayor and common council of the city of Fairbanks to notify the committee through its chairman before any move is made by city employees to condemn as dangerous, unsafe, or not conforming in any way to the city ordinance any home of pioneer or retired elderly person in the city, so that the contemplated condemnation may be softened, modified, or removed, or some action be taken in consultation with the city government to correct the condition or conditions which may have led to the contemplated condemnation.
Mr. Mayor, in defense of Mr. Boucher's motion and my second, I can see, basically, and I've known of several particular instances here where the city officials have condemned a particular piece of property that the people didn't really understand what was going on. And it was difficult, of course, for the city administration, the people, if we're doing the condemnation, to explain to them. They just didn't seem to talk the same language. Now, I can see the feasibility here if you have a group, a small committee from a pioneer group, who you advise them that one of their members or one of their friends has a particular piece of property that doesn't meet the code, that he has to do certain things, that possibly they could better explain it to them and tell them that this has to be done. So it's only an attempt to help the city in itself, the way I look at it. It actually is not binding upon us at this point, but other than if we actually take into consideration their feelings and problems, and that they could possibly be of some assistance on these things. You have run into these particular problems because of that, have you not, Phil?
Yes, Mr. Mayor, I might explain to Mr. Burlington and to the rest of the council. In 1961, we removed about 170 buildings, but my direction to the building official at that time was to take action against those buildings that were not occupied. There were many abandoned substandard structures, and we concentrated on those. The most recent one that we've taken action on is that of Pete Smith. We did it, of course, at the direction of the council. And we also have inspected a structure, or a number of structures, owned, and I noticed by one of the members of this pioneer committee that signed this particular letter. That property is what precipitated the letter. The condition of these structures are about the same as Pete Smith's.
Are they vacant?
No, they're occupied by old members.
Well, it's very unfortunate that you know the pension doesn't have money to go out and rent.
That's right.
It's a very unfortunate situation.
Well, at least in any event, Mayor, I would think that it certainly won't harm the city nor the council. And as Mr. Roberts pointed out, we can take this up at many meetings on discussion and so forth and come to some type of an agreement as to what we want to set as a policy in this matter. But these people have asked only that we consult with them, that the building official consult with them, and possibly they themselves could do us more good than the building official could going out and start the condemnation notice on a building. It may be a small matter to bring the thing up to code or to take care of a problem, but it may be a little tougher matter for the building official to get it across where one of their own people could say what needed to be said.
I think this is a very good motion in one way, because at least there will be no employees of the city going down and putting a notice on and telling them to get out without somebody first knowing about it. So the motion will be, have that good effect.
Question.
All in favor of this motion, seem to kind of aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to hear any special organization?
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, I have a letter.
That was the end of the report to the city council and the action of the city council on this Pioneer Igloo 4 request for some adjustment in the attitude toward the pioneers and elderly people that have small incomes and are not able to pay these enormous costs that have been created over the last 3 years in our economy in Fairbanks area. This was Harry Hughes recording this transfer tape by permission of the council and the city clerk of the city of Fairbanks on this council meeting for a record in Igloo 4, Pioneers of Alaska. use Big Loop for the Pioneer Records in regard to the problems of the pioneers here at Fairbanks, Alaska, Igloo 4.